Welcome to TLDR with Tony and Luke. I'm Luke.
And I'm Tony.
Join us as we discuss how much time zones suck. That's for the end of the show.
That's for the end of the show.
Up first is, though, Tony, I haven't played almost any Satisfactory in the past fortnight.
The world is ending.
I know.
What's happened?
I got to tier 4 is what happened. With tier 4 is like the phase 4 of the space elevator. There's four phases in the current game.
Okay.
The first two phases, I built a little factory that beat that fully automated. And then for phase 3, I was able to just build a small-ish
mega factory.
Just a very small rubber and plastic factory and just mulled over what I needed and built some sort of manual feeding kind of machines that beat phase 3.
Yep.
And in phase 4, I realized that because I'd sort of optimized the first part of the game, those first three phases, that almost nothing was scaled to tier 4, because tier 4 you need a significant amount of water. You need a lot of more stuff.
You need a gigafactory.
Yeah, effectively. And I was like, I need to
start again.
Throw everything in the bin and start again, kind of thing, if I really want to make it all work. And that daunting task was just too much, a little bit. Yeah, I've done a little bit. Like the fact that the rubber factory is up and running and it's powering everything. So I've got power to go now, but I needed to route and work out where the train was going to go.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I need to build a big thing here and a thing here. And then how's that going to work? Anyway, so it's just sort of
stopped being fun. Started to work.
It definitely crossed that line. I'll probably go back to it, but I'd already beaten the game once just recently anyway, so I probably should have put it aside regardless, let's be honest. I saw you jump back into Fantasy Star General 2.
Fantasy General 2, yes.
Is it just Fantasy General or Fantasy Star?
Fantasy General.
Oh, shoot.
Just Fantasy General.
Isn't Fantasy Star a game though as well?
Yeah, Fantasy Star is a game.
Okay, cool. Sorry, go on.
They don't have generals though.
No generals.
So it was not, in fact, the end of the game. The last mission was just the end of chapter 1. So it did feel very much like an ending, and it is an ending. You finish fighting one faction and you go on to start fighting another faction. And my characters all bumped up levels, so the apparent level cap was non-existent. They could go past it. But it did a whole lot of story beats.
Yeah.
Basically, I lost interest in it.
Yep. Fair enough.
I did that one mission. It wasn't the end. And I got distracted by other shiny things.
So yeah, fair enough. And moved on.
I can't say it's bad. Maybe my comment would be they should have thought about game length and pacing. Had that been the last mission, that would have been a good length for me.
Yeah.
My units are already maximum, apart from needing liquid mana, which apparently this second chapter throws liquid mana at you like it's going out of fashion.
Yeah.
Whereas I only got 3 balls of liquid mana for the whole first chapter,
which
is enough to upgrade 2 units.
Yeah.
So my units weren't going to be upgraded. So I'd already lost interest in my units because there was no way to upgrade them.
Yep.
And my heroes, you can't respec your heroes. So it was going back down to the bottom of the tree to start going up the top again.
Yeah.
So there's 3 branches and I got all the way to the top of one branch. Now I've got to go back to the bottom and start going up branch 1 or branch 2.
So
I kind of lost a bit of interest in my heroes, and then a couple of the heroes left and a new hero joined, and I went, I can see what you're trying to do, but I've really, 36 hours, I've had enough of these characters.
That's actually a big, big act one.
Still big act one, yeah.
Very odd. It is annoying when you don't get, I think you can't read where the game is going to go and how long it's going to be. You don't know how much commitment is. You need enough impetus.
Well, because it started off with fairly short missions.
Yeah.
But then the missions started getting longer and longer and longer, and now they're all long. Yeah. All the missions are long.
Yeah, right.
So unless Act 2 starts with short missions again, which you gave me no indication it was going to. Then I might get back into it again. But I got distracted by other shiny things.
Fair enough. It's always there.
It's not a thumbs up. It's not a thumbs down. It's a thumbs neutral at the moment.
Fair enough. We did finish, though, Beat Rising.
Yes, at last.
Beat all the bosses to the end. We ended up really just nuking all of the rates.
Yeah.
So everything basically, I think we made everything for free. We had a couple of people come back towards the end and start playing, and they needed gear. Otherwise, they can't join in. So now it's like, we're really going to
grind everything.
And some of that
again.
End game starts to take a lot. Yeah, yeah. And it's like, why are we? That's just zeroed all out, did all that, just boom, punch out all the things that we had.
Yeah.
And I think most of us had all of it anyway. I don't know. Anyway, it's just sort of like, done with this. The last bosses, though, quite good, quite fun.
Okay.
You know, good mechanics and stuff like that. But nothing like, again, because it's a PvP game.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like
it wasn't designed as a PvE game.
Yeah, they're not boss, the boss fights probably weren't long enough or hard enough really.
Yeah, for a proper PvE game.
Going kind of thing. So overall, I think the game is not it's not a great PvE game. Yeah. It's not bad, but it's not great. Really, if you're gonna play it, you really should just
PvP
it and that's what you should do. The vampire stuff's fun and the aesthetic's cool and I like the combat and you got lots of like options with how you put your spells together because you have like multiple trees and you can mix and match all that stuff up. There's a bit of RNG in terms of like the jewels to upgrade your ability so you can kind of like, you know, tweak that a little bit further and find good combinations and lots of weapons, you know, guns and spears and swords and all that kind of stuff. So there's a good lot of combinations there. It plays really nicely, but I guess ultimately as a PvE experience, it's just a bit lacking.
Yeah.
Yep, kind of thing. That's done, uninstall, delete, finished, okay, forever. I don't know.
Would have been in there.
Maybe we'll go back again. I don't know. If it's going to require us to start again.
Yeah, you probably won't.
Probably won't. Or I would definitely turn all the rates to zero and just turn off all the gathering, the grinding, just ditch all that and just do the fights and that's it. And just be done. Yeah, for sure. Bit of a bummer because I think it's... Because it's just fun. The way that it controls is kind of interesting and different. But apart from that, nothing more to say on that one.
Okay. Well, speaking of grinding.
Oh, God.
The shiny thing that distracted me from Fantasy Genre 2 is called Other Side.
Yes. So not like, the other side.
Regicide or patricide or homicide. Other Side.
So you're killed by people from the supernatural realm.
It's super dark.
Yeah.
And super weird. And I have no idea what they're going for. So, you know those... plague doctors with the hood and the beak.
Yeah, yeah.
That aesthetic throughout the whole game.
Yeah,
really
right.
Dark.
Yep.
And you play. So this is. It's essentially a turn-based tactics game, right?
Mm-hmm.
But put an absolutely brutal roguelike on top of that. So literally, you cannot beat the missions at first until you die. And so the day resets. Every time you die, the day resets. Basically, I don't know if it's not English, if it's not written by an English company, because it's very much weird, very weird storytelling and not straightforward English. But basically, it seems to be your morals or something, and you're trying to save a kid that's being experimented on in a lab or something, and you're fighting good morals versus bad morals.
So like super abstract.
Super abstract, yeah. And so your avatar is dead and gone, and she can manifest reflections of herself.
Mm.
And so you just play all these reflections because you're dead.
Yeah.
The blood queen. You're the blood queen, I think it is.
Mm.
And you're dead.
Mm.
But so you're fighting the weird plague doctor monster things.
Yeah, right.
And so you manifest and the days go through. So the first time I went through, I got to day two and then everybody died. Second time I played it through, I got to day two and everybody died. Next time I played to day three and everybody died. So in order to heal your units, you've got to kill another unit of equal or higher skill.
Oh, right. Okay.
So basically, and how the turn-based system works is there's 100 time units and your actions all take a certain amount of time units. So moving takes a certain amount of time units, actions take a certain amount of time units. So the minimum action I've found so far is 25 time units.
Okay.
If you spend more than 50 time units, you get penalized, you get pushed further back on the timeline.
Oh.
So it's all about managing. It's all about what's it called? Action management. What's that called? There is a term for it. So you got to manage. You manage your actions. So
yeah.
It goes completely against my turn-based mechanic in that you have to wait for the monsters to come to you. You make them waste their action points coming to you.
Yeah, but you can't do that.
Well, no, you have to.
Yeah, or
if you move to them to try and use your strong melee characters.
Because now...
Now you're standing in front of them. You've wasted half of your action points. So you've wasted 35 of your 50 action points moving towards him. He gets to do two actions on you before you get another turn.
Yeah, right. Because it's they've combined movement and action points together in the same pool, exactly, rather than keeping them separate. Yeah,
they're not
out. Yeah, I see. So you got to wait. You got to stand around and wait for them.
The turn-based combat stuff is really interesting. You've got all these weird mechanics. So you've got abilities that take time. Then you've got abilities that take health instead of time.
Oh.
So you sacrifice your own health to do these abilities. Then you've got delayed abilities that are more powerful, but they take longer to strike. So you've got to preempt where the enemy's going to appear. So you strike where they're going to appear.
Yeah.
Then you've got stances. So the sword fighting character can go into a stance where anybody that ends their turn next to her, she just hits them and massacres them.
Love that.
But that costs a lot of health to do that. And so if none of them come next to you, you've wasted all that health.
Right.
Pointlessly. So that's really weird. Then you get, as you play through, you unlock memories that of the child that's being experimented on.
Mm.
Like with scissors all through his back and his eyelids getting cut off. And
Jesus.
It's super dark.
Wow.
It's super dark. But you get these memories and you can apply the memories to your abilities, but that costs one resource. You get three sisters for free. But then to spawn more sisters, you need to spend another resource. But that resource is also used to attach the memories to your sisters. So you're juggling that.
Yeah.
You can only use a sister in one mission every day. So there's synapses. You're inside a brain and you got to close off the synapses as the evil morals are trying to take control of the brain.
Wow.
You got to close off the synapses, but you can only attack one synapse with each sister once on any day. Then random events happen. They can be positive or negative depending on the day. So it's just brutal. It's designed for you to fail and fail and fail and fail and fail and fail and fail and
die.
And fail. And then, so I got one sister up to level 9.
Yeah.
So she's got 10 times as many hit points as the other sisters. And so she survives. But in order to bring her back to life, I have to do a really difficult mission, which is a rescue mission, to rescue a good memory.
Ah.
Which I was struggling to do because the game doesn't explain stuff to you on purpose.
Yeah, okay.
So it doesn't explain to you that, yes, you've got to get the good memory to the exit zone, but what it doesn't tell you is that more and more and more and more and more enemies are going to spawn. So trying to keep them safe and protect them is a waste of time.
Yeah.
Because just you're going to get overwhelmed.
Right.
So basically you just
run.
Wait until they've all had their... So you move a little bit until they all end up behind you in the turn bar.
Yeah.
And then you just sprint for the end.
Right.
And so then once I did that, I got the resource that I needed. Then I had to kill the good memory to bring my sister. So all brutal.
You take a good memory and you kill it.
Yeah.
Jeez. You kill
it to bring back a powerful sister.
Like a turn-based horror game.
I feel a little bit like Hellblade Senua's Sacrifice. It's a little bit like that darkness.
Well, it's that sort of going to that sort of like... when you start diving into memories, I guess like this weird sort of stuff. I just finished reading all of the Sandman graphic novels Neil Gaiman wrote.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of dreams and stuff like that, a lot of, hell and stuff, lots of weird and stuff, happening all the time and that kind of. It can get, creepy very quickly.
It can, yeah.
Mm.
So it's a very, very interesting and unique game. But I don't know if I like it.
Well,
I think the roguelike stuff is just really unnecessary.
Yeah.
It's not adding anything to it at the moment.
You said that to level 9, there is a side grade progression system to get better.
You go up to 15, level 15.
Yeah.
But it's a massive grind.
Yeah.
I was just sacrificing everything to crank into this one sister.
Yeah.
So you go into a synapse and you get experience points. And you kill the enemies and you get experience points. So it is possible to take three sisters on into a synapse, and if one of them kills everything, that sister gets so many more experience than the others.
Right.
And you've got four different types of sisters. You've got a defensive sister, straightforward. You've got a ranged attack sister, again, straightforward. And you've got a melee attack sister, straightforward. Mm-hmm. They're the three you start off with. Then there's a fourth one that's hidden that I haven't unlocked yet. So I've got no idea what the fourth sister does.
Probably inside another happy memory you need to destroy.
I don't know. I don't know what it's going to be. So, yeah, it's really brutal. I thought I got the hang of what was going on. And then I did one of these missions to rescue the good memory and got absolutely overwhelmed.
Wow.
And I thought, I'm going to have to start again. And I did start again. And the same thing happened again. And I thought, okay, you're not supposed to be able to do this. I'm doing something wrong. So I then took till day 5 before I tried to do it and then got absolutely trashed on day 5. And you only get 6 days before the boss attacks you anyway.
Yeah, right. And you die.
So you have to die till you get strong enough to take on the boss on day 6. Yep. And then I think you go into another memory. I don't think it's just the one memory. I think it's a sequence of memories.
How big this game is, how many levels there are. No clue. That's so hard.
And everything's black, white, and red.
Ooh,
so even the color scheme is very...
That's color, a very strong...
Yeah. So I'm definitely intrigued by the game, but I don't know that I like the game.
Yeah.
It's particularly the turn-based system is very frustrating because somehow I always seem to set up really, really good attacks for the enemy. I don't know if I'm just misreading what it's doing. Each enemy does have an AI, so you have to actually read the codex to find out what that enemy's AI is. And I'm misinterpreting some of those AIs and then messing things up. Like, there's one enemy will always attack the furthest away sister.
Oh.
Right, when it just spawns, it will always attack the sister that's furthest away from it.
Yeah.
And all the other things on the map
of
that type will attack the same target that thing's going for.
Oh,
and it's so easy to forget which one it's attacking and mess up completely.
Yeah.
So you want them to be attacking the melee sister who goes into the offensive stance.
But she's normally at the front, not the back well.
And then there's ones that always go for the sister that's got the most hit points.
Yep.
There's one that always goes for the sister that's got the least hit points.
Mm.
There's one that always goes for the sister that last attacked them.
I do like, sometimes like when, you know, we've played some games, some turn-based stuff, you don't understand why.
Yeah, why they're doing what they're
this
doing.
This and this one, at least this one gives you one
if
is.
If you read the codex, it does tell you what they're going to do.
You know how to counter it then.
You just have to remember, and they all look the same. It's not true. They are all different, but they all look ostensibly the same.
Yeah.
So you got to remember which type it is that you're fighting.
Yeah.
And it's just weird and creepy. And I'm going to go back to it.
I don't know. If it gives you nightmares.
No, it doesn't give me nightmares. But and the voices are super creepy as well.
Oh, I hope so. Yeah. God.
There's like these little snippets of memories. Oh. And the subtitles will say something.
Yeah.
So you get a loading screen, and there'll be like the comments on the loading screen.
Yeah.
And that'll be different to what the creepy voice is saying to you in your ear.
Oh.
It's very creepy.
Very creepy.
Yeah.
Oh.
Other side.
Yeah, I don't know if I like that.
No, I don't know who it's aimed for. I really don't know what audience it's aimed at. So I read a review that said they loved it and they thought it's absolutely brilliant. Yeah. Like real-time strategy, love this game.
Yep.
But that reviewer lied.
He's from the other side.
Yeah.
Well, I played something that's a bit depressing but not like horror, right? We played Remnant from the Ashes, which is a post-apocalyptic...
That's a first-person shooter?
Third-person.
Third-person shooter. Okay.
Yeah. In this... similar vein to, I think, probably a lot of things really, but I think that got me, reminds me the most is Fallout.
Okay.
It's kind of like it's a three-man, or I guess solo, up to three players co-op. Fallout, because it's got a lot of influences, it feels like, but like it's got terminals, right, that has like logs and things like that, Fallout-like. Yeah. It's got a lot of environmental storytelling.
Okay.
So the environments are fairly well detailed, and so you sort of, you got to look and see, oh, wow, why is there this, you know, Terminator sphere kind of looking, you know, when Terminator comes in, it's the sphere gets taken away kind of thing looking. And I'm sure it's a callback to Terminator because that's sort of the type of thing it is, you know, like sphere, what is that? And you go read the terminal and you learn about the experiments they're doing and stuff like that. Not a lot of NPC talking necessarily, but lots of like looking and seeing.
Yep.
You're fighting all these demon shade horror monster kind of things, the main like the image you fight at the start, it definitely looked like little demon shades, no legs and yeah. horny kind of things. Yeah. And then some of the other creatures have like big triangle shaped helmets with a big sword, which I feel is in another game, like a Resident Evil game, or maybe Silent Hill has that, but they're huge bulky guys instead kind of thing, because it's not trying to rip off directly, but there's so many, I think there's so many references in it, kind of enemies. And the reason I say Fallout the most is just because the combat is a bit slower. It's not a twitch shootery kind of thing. Everything's a bit...
They move towards you slowly and...
Yeah. I mean, they move fast and you can dodge and roll, but like it's not... The combat isn't frenetic kind of thing. It's more of a Dark Souls style of game with guns than it is, you know...
Aliens Fireteam.
Yeah, Aliens Fireteam was like hordes of enemies coming at you kind of thing. This has a lot less overall, because like five or six, I think we did a church defense scene and like five enemies are coming through the windows, and that was a lot of enemies, like, you know, grunts and then a cut and a big one at the back kind of thing.
Yeah.
Got some great features though. Shared looting.
Okay.
So whatever you find, whatever it is, everyone gets.
Okay.
Whether it's a piece of iron or it's a purple new item, if you pick it up, everyone gets it, which is just, I cannot express
how amazing that is.
Yeah. And because the levels, right, are done really well because they're linear for the most part, right? But you can still get lost in them. It's a bit of verticality. You're inside buildings. And a dilapidated building kind of looks, you're looking around, you don't really know where you are. You get easy to get lost, but I never felt like we were lost.
Right.
So I feel like you kind of don't know where you are, but you look in the map and you get, we just walked down this pathway here. Yeah. But because we went over this building and down through this building, then through the basement and up through here, we've kind of feels like we've traversed.
Oh, we've moved just one building across.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not like a big open world, but there is like a section you work your way through, maybe you do a boss fight, and then when you come into the next teleport back again, you then can unlock a shortcut to get back to the previous area if you want to go back and do stuff over there again kind of thing. And you sort of like work through the level and then you fight a boss at the end and then you go back. So it's got a really nice kind of mission kind of cadence.
Progression forward.
Kind of thing. And then another great feature, so like, you got group loot, cool levels, and then the upgrading system is just really straightforward, which I really appreciate. So, like, you pick a class, of which different classes, I'm not sure, like, there's not a great deal of difference because once you have picked it, you can then go and buy the other starting weapons for the other classes and then upgrade them anyway kind of thing. Yeah. You're not necessarily locked into this thing. Class. It sort of gives you one and sort of says, this may be how you want to go forward. We'll give you a set of weapons that are sort of fit for that. I can't remember the classes now, but anyway, but you can just go buy other ones.
Yeah.
And then it's sort of, it's a very simple thing of like, oh, you get iron at the start and the early missions will give you iron and you use X amount of iron to go to the first five levels.
Yeah.
And then it's, I don't know, forged iron.
Yeah.
And then it's tempered forged iron. And then it's blah, blah, blah iron, you know, kind of thing. And then that will just come with the next, you know, range of levels you go through kind of thing. So you just sort of like with your armor, you just pick the armor that has the best like secondary set bonuses that you want to build for your character, regardless of whatever you picked at the start.
Yeah.
You buy that with your coins and then you upgrade it using iron or whatever to upgrade it. Really kind of flat, but gives you lots of sort of options to pick from kind of thing. I got a submachine gun, a shotgun, and a massive hammer, which is great for my tankyman kind of class. I'm at the front, kind of like taking a bit of fire, you know, trying to run towards enemies, try to get them before they get killed by the boys at the back who are just pinging off everything, you know, from a distance kind of thing. It's a great setup, kind of works, you know, really well, because I got like, especially with that hammer, if I can get up to the boss and start hitting it, huge damage, just like, you know, single point damage is not too shabby kind of thing. Well, they're like fending off ads and some just like pounding the boss a few times. Lots of like random, like while the levels are like linear and kind of static, there are like random events that can pop up where there's one with this tree that shows up, and apparently you got two options. You can fight the tree, which we did, or you can find a merchant to then get something and then bring it back to the tree. So it has this, looks like it has like a whole, like a deeper system of like hidden stuff around the place. Right. Kind of like your game with like, it's sort of, I don't know exactly what the go is, but there's certainly mention of dreamers and stuff like that in it. I have a suspicion that what we're fighting is like, a bit like your other game, like creatures from dreams and stuff like that, that are a bit weird and different, nightmares and stuff like that, you know. Let me see the Corinthian. Oh, that'd be interesting. I wonder if they got a demon with teeth for eyes. That'd be a good reference callback. Weapons are powerful. Like you feel like you sort of, with upgrading your stuff, like you feel like you're keeping up pace with the game kind of thing. Which is really nice. So long as you're like upgrading your stuff and you're not just like putting one level into a bunch of different guns, you can sort of like keep going up and keeping in pace with what's going on. The other thing it's got is, aside from, so you got weapons, obviously, two weapons and a melee weapon. Everyone gets that. You got just three pieces of armor. Four pieces of armor, head, chest, pants. Do you have boots? Felt like it was less than normal. Maybe it's four pieces of armor. And then two rings, a necklace and a trinket. So again, not like a huge amount of gear, just enough to keep it interesting without like bogging you down like a looter shooter with just like trillions of pieces of gear. The last thing it's got are these weapon mods, which is a bit odd because they're very not weapon mods, but you can attach two of them to your two primary guns. And when you use them, it does something like I got a healing pool. So she's had a huge AOE healing pool on the ground, which heals everyone up who stands in it kind of thing. And that's a weapon mod.
Yeah, no.
You know, and the other one I got was it marks all enemies in a radius and makes them do more damage. There was one that was like put up a decoy was another one and fire bullets was another one kind of thing. And these mods, you can just change them around.
Take them in and out.
Take them in and out. You only put one. You only get one to apply, right? But you can move it as you please. Yeah. No restrictions. Again, just like...
Just let you play with it.
Let you play with it. Let you have fun and, you know, move things around and, you know, pick it up and move it as required kind of thing. You just got to find the right currencies or whether that's crystals or coins or whatever else kind of thing, you know. There's a few vendors around that you can buy some of the materials you might need for coins and then you can, you know, I guess as you go forward in the game, you can trade in your higher level iron for low level iron if you need that to start upgrading your weapon from level one again because you want to change a different build so you don't have to, like, go and grind. You take good stuff and turn it into the crap stuff so that you can do those first five levels and then move it on kind of thing. I feel like it's a really well put together experience kind of thing. So it's one of those ones where I'm actually looking forward to going back to it and doing some more kind of thing because it is quite fun to play. It feels accessible because it is a bit slower, but you know, you can take hits and die fairly easily as well because it's got that Dark Souls kind of pedigree where like, I think when you slow it down and sort of take away healing a little bit, like it's not even that does that, right? Like it's actually very generous in what it does, right? So the healing puddle is one way. You then have these dragon hearts, they call them. You get three of them and you can either revive someone with that or heal yourself.
Okay.
And so it's better if you use it for revives because that heals up 100%. Whereas if you're... It only gives you like 90%, say, if you just use it on yourself kind of thing. So, again, you have a nice little dilemma about how do I use my healing. And when you get to a checkpoint, you just all sit around and touch the checkpoint and it fills everything back up again kind of thing. And I feel like it's really easy at the moment and I have a suspicion it's going to get significantly more difficult as we start to progress through kind of thing.
Yeah.
The first lot of enemies are a lot of like melee enemies, which is fine for my hammer. And then we started getting to shooty enemies and I'm like, I realize why we get the traits that's damage reduction from range targets kind of thing. We killed the book. We saved someone in the church and they give you a new trait.
Yeah, okay.
So like with the traits, you get these books all over the place other things you give you trait points. I'm not sure. They seem to keep getting like 20 trait points so far. Like, so they're pretty like handing them out. And then you have like a whole bunch of different things, you know? Yeah. Like, I've been doing like endurance. So more health, more melee damage, more damage reduction, but there's like spell power, and obviously the new ones like range reduction and stuff like that. So like not the typical things you get from trade, but it's just like a straight, like you put a point in and it gives you more numbers,
yeah.
you know, so you can pick something that makes a lot of sense for you and your character and your yeah. build, again, without like going into a whole bunch of like nitty gritty about yeah, going up yeah, this yeah. tree or anything like that. No, you just got this, yeah. you know, flat cards kind of thing. So I feel like it's really accessible. Maybe that's the thing I'm trying to say. It's really accessible. Although the levels are really complicated, they're easy to navigate.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of tries in the builds, but it's all pretty easy to accessible yeah. and there's nothing like sort of to get in the way of that kind of thing.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to yeah jumping back into it. The only negative on it is, you know, it's a PlayStation 4 game.
Yeah.
You know, so the graphics aren't...
They're PlayStation 4 graphics.
You know.
Yeah.
They're super serviceable.
Oh, speaking of that, did you yeah. see that Ratchet & Clank is coming out on PC?
Yes, I played that weeks ago. I was super excited when it came out. Yeah. That's the one I haven't played as well.
Yes, it is. Yes.
Oh, I'm so excited. When's that coming out?
I don't know, soon.
God, I got so much to play.
You do.
In this back half of the year is just...
It's going to be a busy back half of the year.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So, three-man action's a bit weird. Again, I don't know why there's all these three-player games. I didn't know there were so many around, but
yeah.
it seems to be kind of thing. Yeah, yeah. So, tell me, though, what's not a three-player game is Diablo 4?
Diablo 4.
There's so many players on Diablo 4.
Yes, yes. Yeah, so, well, you were saying about how you keep up with the weapon creep. In yep. Remnant, I did not feel the same in Diablo 4.
Oh, really?
So while I felt powerful at the start, yep. I'm now up to level 30.
Yep.
So you get to level 50 before you hit Paragon level. So I'm up yep. to level 30. So I'm 3/5 of the way through
yep.
up to Paragon level. And I'm struggling to fight the monsters.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's interesting. So that's one thing is that I don't know how to power build my character. You're getting new equipment all the time. It feels unlike the other Diablos. I feel like I'm getting a lot more equipment options. Like there's too many options on each piece of equipment for you to make easy judgment calls on what's better.
Yep.
So I like to focus on the positives first.
Yeah.
So the story is very Diablo and yeah. very good.
Yep.
The story is very engaging.
Oh, good. That's good because you were a little concerned at
yeah,
the start.
No,
there,
I'm finding yeah. the story very okay. engaging. And excellent. It's implemented the open world. That's in inverted quotes. The open world is implemented very well.
Okay.
And then you can navigate all around the map.
Yep.
You just choose where you go. The map always levels to you no matter where you are. So unlike the other Diablos where the monsters are fixed based on where you are.
Yeah.
The monsters are always at your level no matter where you are on the map.
It's one of those things that can be good and bad.
Yeah, it's annoying because I can't go back to earlier areas and do easy stuff.
Yeah.
Because they're not easy. They're still just as hard.
Hard, yeah.
So it does feel very Diablo, which is good. The story's entertaining and good. There are, unlike other Diablos, there's a few main story threads running at the same time. So it's easy to lose track of which story thread you're currently following. So that would maybe a better journaling system or something would be better.
That was actually one thing about Remnant is like trying to work out what mission we were doing and why we were doing it. Yeah. I don't know if it's because it's a multiplayer environment or not, but that was not.
Yeah, why am I trying to talk to this person?
I'm not even sure if they have a journal or a log in it, actually. That's a good point. I'll have to go back and look at that next time I play it. But yeah, you can continue. Yeah.
So when Diablo 4 is being Diablo, I think it does it really well. The new character leveling system, other than the fact that I feel like I'm very underpowered for the monsters I'm fighting. It's quite good.
Yep.
They've got different tiers. They've called the tiers different things. And so then your equipment can buff a specific tier of your abilities.
Yep.
And you've got to put ranks.
Gee. Yeah, right.
You've got to put ranks into, like 5 ranks into tier 1 to unlock tier 2 and 5 ranks into tier 2 to unlock tier 3.
It's the complete opposite of Remnant, isn't it? Like super complicated, lots of detailed stuff
and
in there.
As a sorcerer, I've got... lightning, fire, or cold, and then I've got the passives, which can increase my mana regeneration or increase the mana pool. So all these, constantly making all these choices.
You would hope that would improve, make the game like have a greater longevity kind of thing.
I could play a completely different character
and
by
get a different,
choosing different options. But I've got 5 different character classes to play, so I don't think I'm going to play through as another sorcerer.
No.
But you can spend money to respec your character completely from the start, which is good.
That is good. That is good. Yep.
So it feels a bit like Diablo 2. The skill tree feels a bit like Diablo 2.
Yep.
But it's got the beauty of the Diablo 3 skill tree that you can respec the whole thing and do a completely different build. So if you find a bit of a... Say I'm playing an electricity sorcerer, which I am, because I didn't go online to say don't play an electricity sorcerer because they're crap.
Oh.
And I find this awesome bit of kit that's for a fire sorcerer.
Yeah,
I could then spend the gold and completely respec into a fire sorcerer so I can actually make use of that really awesome bit of kit.
An option. I do like to have options. It's a bit disappointing when you've got so – this is the problem I have is like they have so many options – that there are a lot of dud options in dud the options. Tree. Yeah. Like,
so there's a really high, like tier, I think it's a tier 4 skill for the lightning sorcerer. It's a lightning ball.
Yeah.
It's utter crap. It's complete and utter crap.
It's a ball of lightning. How could it be anything other than kick ass?
Well, it moves forward at a fixed rate and it shoots lightning bolts at every enemy in its area of effect.
What?
But it shoots about this.
Yeah.
Fast, which means they've all run past it to get to you, and they've got hit once or twice if you're lucky.
You really need it, and it's sort of one of those abilities needs to be.
If it shot this fast, then it would probably be really good because it would slaughter all the little minions.
Yeah.
But
or chain lightning it
just.
Well, you need to like
doesn't
lock them in place first. You know, like any, it's sort of a.
It's just complete
just doesn't make sense
compared to Frost Nova, which freezes them all in place and stops them attacking.
You need like a sorcerer.
They're frozen. They can't move.
And then you're ball lightning them.
You don't
and
have
then,
enough skill points to do that.
Yeah,
well, you can if you decide that's the build you want to go for.
Yeah,
it's all about builds. It's a very interesting build combinations. Yeah.
Maybe I'm just trying to like think like why would they have these? Well, maybe they're like, well, this class would be really good as a support in this other party configuration, and that's why you would have this because you have someone else.
If the barbarian had locked them all up.
Yeah, and then you do that.
And you
that.
Just sit back and launch a ball lightning and it hits them because they're standing and it hits them five times.
It's a very...
And it hits
very,
all of them.
Yeah.
So it does good. It's a big area of effect, but it just fires too slowly to be any good in this for a single player sorcerer. So, it does stuff really well. It does feel very much like Diablo. The music's Diablo. The graphics are Diablo.
Yeah.
The weird story, the dark team.
We've got a horror theme going through this episode. You've got vampires, a couple of dreams, and now we've got like a devil action going on.
So it's a new enemy. It's not Diablo. It's Lilith.
Yeah, Lilith, the Blood Queen.
The Mother of Despair. The Mother of Sanctuary and the Daughter of Despair or something.
So
she built the world. It's all about how the world, Sanctuary, is actually the middle between heaven and hell. It's not actually, it's not the humans' planet at all.
Right.
It's not for the humans. It's like neutral ground for the angels and the demons to stop fighting each other. So that's what this one's all about.
So why do humans get there? Because some angel or demon.
Well, that's what the story's about. Lilith actually made the humans. That's part of the story that I've got to at the moment. So it's not really spoilers. It's the story's very abstract, just like all Diablo.
They
tell it very intensely and very seriously, but when you actually boil it down, it's actually a little bit abstract about what's actually going on.
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
So and some of the new additions are good. So the dungeons are a good addition. You get permanent unlocks for all your characters on that world tier by doing a dungeon. So I'm playing a sorceress, but I've been able to unlock barbarian skills and druid skills.
Okay.
And so then when I play a barbarian or druid character from level one, I have those skills unlocked.
That's a nice little replayability nod. I just did
a new thing called a stronghold, which is basically a town that's been taken over by the demons. And you've got to do this mini game that's quite significant and took me an hour to finish it. Significant mini game to unlock, to remove the demons from the town, then the humans all come back.
Aye.
And then you've got a new town
that
you've got access to.
Okay. Oh, and that stays when you replay
it stays.
Again.
Oh, I don't know if it stays when you replay or if it stays as a stronghold, but now because you're traveling from area to area.
Oh, I see. But at least you're making some changes because I think 003, everything was static.
Yeah.
There was no changes at all, there?
This changes. And
now
it's not a stronghold anymore. It's now a town.
Yep.
And when I load it in again, it's now a town again.
Yeah, nice.
So that's quite good. But I don't like that they've made it – it's effectively an MMO.
Yeah, well.
Which doesn't add anything to the game at all. So I did find a couple of – I was doing a tough quest and I found a couple of guys that were doing the quest at the same time.
Yep.
And they were obviously in a party together, so they were talking to each other.
Yep.
And they were helping me. So, which was handy because it was out of the bit I was doing was tough. And then they just bailed. They just disappeared.
Oh, really?
So, I got overconfident and I went and I got destroyed. But it doesn't matter. Dying's not really that consequential. Just your equipment gets reduced. And it just gets annoying when you're doing really well and then all of a sudden you start doing badly.
Yeah.
And people keep popping up in weird places and it doesn't feel like Diablo. It breaks me out of the Diablo. And then going into town and they're all running around and it's just like Destiny or anything. Or any of those games. It's horrible with hubs. I just don't like that at all.
I think that's fair. If you're not playing, you know, with other people,
yeah,
then you know,
and there's world events and there's all that sort of stuff. There's all the MMO stuff to it. But my biggest gripe about it being constantly online is the same gripe I have with Gears of War.
Mm.
If you only want to play the single-player game, you have to download all the multiplayer stuff before you can play the single-player game.
Yeah.
So I've been playing it for 2 weeks now.
Yep.
It's already patched 4 times in 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's probably still very much in early patching.
No, they're doing new end-game content for the people that have already got to the end game. But if you're not up to that, you still have to download that 8 gigabyte patch to the game, which takes 3 hours and takes 8 gigs off your quota.
Why? Microsoft really needs to get behind. Maybe they have block level updates where you don't have to get like whole chunks of new files and stuff like that. It's probably not 8 gig worth of content that they've added, but that one module is 8 gig now in total.
And it's not just that. It's also the downtime. Like you sit. I sit down on my Xbox to play it. I said, this game needs to be updated. 3 hours. Well, I'm not sitting here waiting 3 hours.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm a Povo person because I don't have unlimited download.
Yeah.
So a person with unlimited download would just have automatic updates on and just leave the thing on the whole time.
That also then, okay. Well, there's a couple of things.
How much power does that chew up for a start?
Well, I think it goes into sleep mode.
No, but it doesn't update in sleep mode.
Doesn't it turn itself on at 3 o'clock and then update and then turn itself back into sleep mode again?
You have to set that. Yeah, you can set that and you can't get it to do that.
That'd be good, but then you need unlimited data and you need to have it. Like, also, like, if your download speed isn't very big, that's also a long time it's got to be on just downloading, doing nothing else but just downloading as well kind of thing. Yeah. I really like that Steam now has local area network patching.
So now I've got like your friends.
Two computers, in the house. Really good. One downloads it, and even if you want to install a game the other computer has, it just starts straight across the network. So I installed like Borderlands 3 in like
10 seconds.
It wasn't quite fast, but it was certainly faster than the 103 gigabyte download would have been coming off. And I didn't have to like do the usual shuffle that I do in order to copy it across the network. It just went whoop and pulled it straight off my machine and it was just easy. Great. That is nice. It doesn't really help you, or anything like that. But like,
so I'm expecting
updating's a real pain. Updating's and it used to annoy me with
Gears of War 5 because once they start doing the end game content, they got to keep updating it all the time to keep all the end game players interested, which means for those of us who aren't at the end game content, we're just getting these unnecessary patches constantly
that don't
add no value to my gameplay.
Because you're not able to access it anyway.
Yeah.
Patching, I think patching and updates across, like, it doesn't matter what you're talking about, what you're talking about, like apps on your phone, about website updates, all that stuff. It's tedious.
But it's new for Diablo 4.
Yeah.
Because Diablo 1, 2, and 3 were all single player games. Some of them with a multiplayer component.
I mean, 3 had multiplayer stuff on it.
But this, it's just the same problem I've got with Gears of War. You want to sit down and play it. It's a single player game.
Yeah.
You should be able to sit down and play it whenever you want. But no, it's got a new update that you have to download. You can't say, I'm not interested in this content. Please let me play the version I've got.
Well, Guild Wars 2 has a playable bar. So when a new patch comes out, you have like a little thing.
You gotta wait till you get to playable.
Playable, which is usually like only at like 10% of the bar.
This
which
one
is
had
core
it
patches.
At about 75%.
Yeah, that's too much. Like it's just the first bit, and then you can just sort of like leave it, let it download in the background while I'm playing or whatnot. You know, just give me, because if you're not gonna be in those areas, I think with Guild Wars 2, what happens is if you go and try to go into a map that's been patched, it just says you need to download it before you can get to that area, kind of thing. And it's really, really neat because you're not stuck.
Yeah.
Waiting. Normally by the time it's logged in and you've done that part of it, it's on the playable part of the, you know, the thing.
Yeah.
Other games have had that as well. They should, I don't know. It's just, it's poor. It's poor experience all around for most things.
It is. And it's
patching.
New for Diablo and new for Blizzard. And it does the World of Warcraft. It at least it gives you this update to tell you that we're going to do server patching on this date and the game's going to be unavailable. Which is an old throwback to World of Warcraft, where every Tuesday night we couldn't play because they were patching it.
Patching night, you know, and MMOs are like it is. They must think that they're going to make a lot of money out of being like an MMO than not, because it's a lot of extra hassle, isn't it?
Yeah, you know? It is. I'm really enjoying it when it's being Diablo, but when it's being Diablo MMO, I just okay, no.
Hmm.
I don't want to play this. I don't want to put up with this crap, which is why I went back to Fantasy General and Outside, because it had a 3.5 hour patch to do. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how long I keep playing it for. If they keep patching it, if I get another 4 patches in the next 2 weeks, I probably won't touch it again. Because I'll go to sit down to play it. It's a lot of patching in a very short period of time.
Yeah. I thought they might be just like still bug fixing it.
But. No. It's like they're doing seasons. And so the eight gig one, which was 3.5 hours, was the new season for the end of July, start of August.
Yeah.
And of course, you don't get to do that. You got to start a brand new character to do the season content. Yeah, it says new season content available. You cannot access that with this character. You need to start a new character.
Yeah. That's the same as the old one.
Yeah.
Yes, the old one. So you had the same seasonal thing. Start a new character and power it up and... Yeah.
So I'm not interested in that. I just want to play Diablo like I always play Diablo.
Fair enough. Yeah, they could really have done more to make that.
Well, considering they put so much effort into the, it's a bit like the new Indiana Jones movie. When the new Indiana Jones movie is being in Indiana Jones, it's really good.
Yeah.
When the new Indiana Jones movie is trying to do something different, it really fails.
Yeah.
So I feel the same way about this Diablo. Mm. When it's being Diablo, it's really good.
Yeah.
When it's trying to be an MMO, it really fails.
I wonder if that sentiment is going to carry on to our next game, Baldur's Gate 3.
Yes.
Because I feel like we could come back and have that exact same thing where it's trying to be, when it's trying to be Baldur's Gate, it's amazing. And when it's trying to be something else, it's just pants.
Yeah, it could be.
I'm still only on the fence about how good this is going to be. I don't know. In the lead up, because it's coming out, callbacks to the start of the show.
Yeah.
Ostensibly, it comes out on the 3rd of August, but that is the 3rd of August, Eastern Standard Time American.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not Australian Eastern Standard Time. No. Australian time, it's 1 o'clock on the 4th,
so which is a pointless time. So in all their advertising, they should have actually said August the 3rd, da-da-da-da-da, PST, or whatever
standard time zone is.
Instead of August the 3rd, you can all get it August the 3rd. August the 3rd is going to be the day. You're going to be so happy on August the 3rd. Lying bastards. No, we're not. We can't touch it to August 4th.
Yep.
Well, we can play the preview. Whatever it is, pre-release.
It almost feels dumber that it's already on early access and all we're getting is the release stuff that we have to wait.
That's already there. Just turn it on.
I don't understand. There's got to be there's probably some rationale behind not just doing it unlocks 12 a.m. on your location. Whenever that happens to be for you, versus, it's all the exact same moment across the world, even though some of the world is in darkness kind of thing. You know,
and this game is not competitive. There's no reason for people not to get ahead of other people.
Yeah.
There's none of that.
None of that. It's been seen. Everyone's already seen what it is. You know, like
if it was a competitive PvP MMO, I could understand it.
Yeah.
But it's not.
Or if it was brand new and no one has seen it before.
And been out for 3 years already.
Yeah.
Yes. It's
we're really ticked off because we planned on playing on Thursday night.
Yep.
We'll have a regular Thursday night session, and that was going to be perfect because I thought it would drop at some point during the day. We'd be able to whatever.
Get our characters sorted out, get started on Thursday night.
Negative,
Ghostwriter. That's a negatory, Ghostwriter.
Yeah. So.
That's very annoying.
That's very annoying.
And I also spent $50 getting extra download quotas so I could download it. So I could play it on Thursday night.
Because Diablo 4 took up all your data for the month.
Well, it has actually, yes. Yes.
Jeez.
So yeah, I'm very annoyed because I could have just left it running over the weekend to patch.
Because
I'm away on the weekend, so I can't play till Sunday night anyway.
Yeah.
So I just effectively wasted $50. Thank you, Larian Studios.
Yeah, that's really lame. Okay, so apart from time zone shenanigans, the next thing is what classes are we going to play?
Well, and the interesting thing that I read is the CEO of Larian recommends you play a custom character for your first playthrough.
Yes, I thought that was really interesting, you know, and that the rationale was that you get to roleplay the character that you want, and when you replay the game the next time, you can pick one of the origin stories and then have more content for your second playthrough.
In more context.
More context, but also like just more content to enjoy and stuff as well. Because you've got
their story and getting told.
Yeah, kind of thing.
Which you didn't have on the first playthrough.
I thought that was really... more context, more understanding all the different things, people's different sides, what they thought about it. But to me, that also is just more context. So if you want to play it again, you could just have, you know, only you, because you were done the main story, right? So then you have all these extra side quests maybe and all a bunch of other stuff to sort of like make that second playthrough more interesting, which you don't normally get. So I think that's I think we should just have our own custom characters.
So you can turn it into a 220-hour game instead of it's a 110-hour game.
Chicken, how long is the main campaign? Is it really?
I think it's 110 hours, Yeah, that's no side quest. That's just core story. It's big. It's a big game.
We'll see. It'll be interesting to see how long we can keep a crew going. We have two other ring-ins. We got previous on the show, Josh. And I don't think Aaron's ever been on the show before, but I do play part of it.
He was our pilot for
He was our pilot. For Pulsar. Of course. And Josh was the captain for Pulsar. So it's kind of the Pulsar crew coming back again to try out Baldur's Gate 3. Aaron was very keen. Because he'd played, Baldur's Gate 2 sort of thing back in the day, so it's sort of similar to me, nostalgic. Josh, I don't think he's played any of them. He had heard of them,
okay,
but he was more playing Fallout than he was playing Baldur's Gate. I was playing Baldur's Gate, not Fallout, kind of thing. So we're all the same age. We're playing the same sort of games of the year and whatnot. So it'll be good to see. And I think I think the custom characters will be funny in that. You know, they're just going to be our characters that with our own thing made up, which could be good. I'm looking at going for some sort of, unsurprisingly, stabby man.
Yeah.
You know, walk up, or woman, that'd probably be, let's be honest. Yeah. Walk up to someone, stick the pointy end in.
The pointy end goes in the other guy.
Yeah, that's it. Problem solved. Lots of armor, be a bit of tank, you know, fill that kind of niche out. Well, I don't know.
You're making the classic mistake that all D&D noobs make.
What's that?
You can be a tank or you can be a damage dealer as a fighter. Can't be both.
Well, you can be a spellcaster as a fighter, which is weird sort of thing. Yes. So I'm not fussed about doing damage. That'll be for you guys to take out kind of thing. You know,
that's the rogue's role.
Well, Josh is keen to be the rogue. You're going to be wizardman of some...
Well, there's lots of spellcasting classes.
There's lots. So, and even like...
too many choices.
Aaron wants to be like a healer kind of support thing. And it's like, well, that's being a cleric, but it's also picking the right god. Yes. So you get the right spells, which is really interesting.
So that'll be interesting because actually playing clerics in the pen and paper tabletop, they're very disappointing.
Okay.
Because they don't get enough spells to be able to use their spells regularly, and their spells don't do as much damage as the wizard spells.
Right.
So they're not as flashy and as interesting as the wizard spells. Right. They don't get as many attacks as a fighter, so they can't do the damage output standing toe-to-toe. So basically, the clerics I've played have ended up being damage magnets. The only thing that they can do is utilize their hit points to keep the other characters alive.
Yeah.
So I hope that they fix that for Baldur's Gate 3. And they've really worked out how to make clerics interesting.
Yeah.
So clerics start on even keel until you get to level 5.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden the other classes shoot up logarithmically and clerics just keep plodding along.
What an oversight for such a game that you would think, like, these rule sets take a while to put together.
So I think it harks back to when clerics were the only character class who could heal.
Yeah, right.
So you had to have a cleric who could heal. And clerics were really good at healing. They had some interesting other off spells, and they were the second best fighters that they were.
Yeah, right.
But now they've made so many other fighting classes.
Yeah.
And they've made fighters so much better than just swinging their swords.
Yeah.
But they haven't given any of that stuff to the clerics. Mm. They've forgotten to give clerics anything new and good.
Ah, right.
So clerics haven't improved logarithmically, and just about every other character class has improved logarithmically.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll have to make sure Aaron double checks that, like, just see what the go is online about being a cleric.
Well, if he wants to be a healer, that is the one thing you can. If you choose the right god, they can become astoundingly good healers.
Yeah.
We can have a chat about what he actually wants to play. But it does sound like we're not going to have conflict of both or two of us wanting to play the same role.
Yep. I wasn't sure if I'd go barbarian or fighter. There's two choices there. I'm not sure exactly yet. Now we've got... Now, get a bit of time before we actually play. I'll log on and have a look because there's a lot of subclassing.
Yes,
you know, there stacks. Is. Stacks. And yeah. I'm not sure. I wasn't sure exactly how subclassing worked. Like,
so at level 3, you choose a subclass effectively.
And you stop getting levels in the main class?
If no.
But that.
So you get at certain level points, instead of getting an ability from your main class, you get an ability from your subclass instead.
Okay. Right. So it's different.
So if you got spells, so if you're an Eldritch Warrior, for example, at level 3, you choose to become an Eldritch Warrior.
Yeah.
And at level 3, you get access to some minor spells.
Yeah.
And then level 4, level 5, you get fighter stuff.
Yeah.
But then at level 6, you get a new Eldritch Warrior ability.
What would happen if I didn't Eldritch Warrior? Would
Then you get what other? No, you can't not. You can't not choose a subclass.
Oh.
You have to choose a subclass.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. I missed that part. Yeah. Is that different than it used to be in other D&D editions?
Oh, yeah. This is new for 5th edition.
Yeah. Okay. Because I thought when I was playing Neverwinter Nights, I want to say.
Yeah. No, it was just a character class. And you got new things every level.
Yeah. Okay.
Then they tinkered with prestige classes in 3rd edition, where if you built your character a certain way, you could suddenly unlock this prestige class and get really good at something. I think that's where they got the idea from, but now what they've done is they've made them subclasses.
Yep.
So you can have the two people, oh, I want to play a fighter. No, I want to play a fighter. Well, okay, you play an Eldritch Warrior and you play a Battlemaster.
And you get a bit
of different. You both play fighters and then both fighters are going to play completely differently.
Yeah, which is great. I think that's cool. I think I'll have to read through the subclasses, have a bit more of a play and see. And then pick what race I'm going to be to match up with that as well, because I haven't looked at that yet either. Because
knowing Larian, there's going to be stuff that they respond to you based on what race you are as well.
I hope so.
They got fair. I remember being super impressed with how much depth they went into with both Divinity 1 and Divinity 2.
Yep.
And it reacted based on stuff like what race you were, what class you were, what choices you'd made beforehand.
Yeah. I'm sure it's all going to come into play.
Yes.
See who's going to be the outsider. Or are we going to be sexy elves?
With tadpoles in our heads.
Oh, yeah. God, that's right, isn't it?
That's the main crux.
The main thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Talk about Eldritch horror.
Yes. It's very Eldritch horror themed tonight.
It is very much, isn't it? I should have gone with that with the opening rather than the time zone thing. Yeah. I didn't pick up the through line there.
Theme going through.
I think the only thing that isn't horror is satisfactory, but when you consider that the person that you play is kind of like an indentured servant sent off to a remote planet to mine stuff, it kind of gets a little bit sort of, you know, dystopian darker. There too, you know? What else? Baldur's Gate 3.
I'm going to spend hours on the character creation screen.
Well, probably do that before we start playing, I guess.
Because you can only do custom characters with the pre-release stuff, I think. So I can actually, now that I've actually downloaded it, I can log on. I thought
some of the subclasses weren't available.
Because you don't get up high enough levels.
Right, okay.
It's only the prologue, I think, is all that's all people have been able to play for the last 3 years.
Yeah.
I think is the prologue.
Right.
And they've been able to try different character classes and different races. But I think you can only use custom characters. So I should be able to play with the custom characters.
Have a bit of a play. I might do that as well then. That wasn't where I was going with that, though.
Sorry.
No, you're right. You're right. And I've... pausing, but like turn-based versus real-time will be interesting as well, because there's no pausing.
No.
As far as I'm aware.
I don't. So, well, what was... Divinity was turn-based, so I'd be surprised if it's...
Yeah. Baldur's Gate was real-time with pausing. You could turn it to turn-based, but it was actually really...
I always played it turn-based.
Yeah. So I don't know whether this is going to play better with four of us, whether it'd be easier just to go...
It'd be much easier turn-based with four of us than real-time.
I thought real-time would be easier.
You'd get on top of each other. Don't go and run and fight that monster because I'm about to cast a fireball on that monster. We'll go, don't go, too late.
Too late. Over there. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Yeah, we'll have to see, I suppose. I just don't know how long for a 110-hour game.
Yeah, so that's the thing with the Pathfinder. Yeah. I found the Pathfinder combat system... I could be much more effective and efficient by playing it turn-based, but it just took so long for each combat.
Maybe it'll depend. But like, if you can switch between easily, then maybe for the little ones.
Yeah, you just do real-time.
Real-time, and then, when you have big fights and you turn it, stop it, and okay, let's be tactical. Oh,
that's the other thing I was going to say for Diablo 4, which I forgot to say.
Yeah.
Is you're just dead suddenly in Diablo 4, I find. Like, I'm no problem, no trouble, no problem, and it's dead.
Boom.
Suddenly. Something just killed me. I don't know what it was. And then you come back and go, oh, that thing there killed me.
That was exact. We played, speaking of horror games, we did play a little bit of Hunt Showdown before we played Remnant from the Ashes, which you've got to go and like fight more Eldritch horror kind of creatures and stuff like that. Yeah. But it's got a PvP aspect to it kind of thing. And just the amount of times I died from like, one time I opened the door and this grenade just landed at my feet and blew me up. I'm like, how did he know I was going to be opening this door to throw that grenade? Yeah. I don't know what was going on there, but I just like, oh, open the door, oh, boom, explode. Yeah. Oh, I'm dead. Oh, never mind then. Okay. I'm waiting for the next round.
So my point got to this segue was that we may find that we're playing in real time and then all of a sudden we're dead because we don't know that it just got too hard.
Yeah, that could be a challenge as well. That's why I was like, oh, it'd be interesting. Cause, I mean, I'm just conscious of like, okay, so there's four people. That makes turn-based a bit slower. If it's really the 110 hours, that's a lot of commitment, a long time, a lot of sessions to get through that whole thing. So I'm like, oh, really? I just kind of hope that we can do...
We'll just wait and see.
See how it goes, I'm just curious. Yeah. See how it pans out and how the conversation tree
system depends how works much, as well. How big the chunks of conversation are too. Yeah. I often find that if you go story, 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 small combat, story, 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 chop, story, 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 small combat, then I'm going, I'm sick of the story now. Yeah. Why don't you use my character's abilities? Yeah. Stop giving me story. Too much. I hope they've got that pacing right and they give you enough combat as well as the story exposition.
Keep it going. Keep it going. Yeah, yeah. Anything else on Baldur's Gate 3? Anything else you're concerned about? What do you like? And
I do.
It looks pretty.
It looks like they've been fairly faithful to the 5th edition. So
that's good.
Should be good.
Yeah.
So I haven't played a 5th edition rule set game. Ugh. Computer game.
Yeah. That's something new. I loaded up... Baldur's Gate 2 Enhanced Edition.
Yes.
Just to see.
Yes. It's ugly.
It's old.
Oh, okay. So I bought it in a pack for like $12.
Yeah.
All the Baldur's Gates, all the Neverwinter Nights.
I've got all of them.
All the gold box.
Yeah.
I loaded up one of the gold boxes. And I went, oh, that's right. It's second edition rule set.
Yeah, because isn't it advanced edition? Like second advanced, which is even edition, weirder as well. Advanced
Dungeons and Dragons second
edition. Yeah. God. Yeah. What was the music, right? Yes. I really hope Larry didn't get the music right because I feel that was such a big thing about it. And the dramatic flair that Forgotten Realms has.
Yeah.
Right? I want that to be there as well. And I really hope they've captured that. That's going to be my two biggest things, you know, like the implied, the implied lore and depth of the world that just gets thrown around, you know, like little, I mean, like they got a little quote from the wise Alondo, you know, and it's like you have to just kind of push, you know, who this person is to be quoted, you know. Yeah. It's just sort of like all that stuff is so cool. I hope they really capture that. It's gonna be great.
Yeah.
And four people is gonna be
chaos.
I hope so. Keep it interesting.
Yes. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
We'll give you an update next episode.
Yes, we'll have at least, two PlayStations in between there. So that'll be a good sort of get started into it kind of thing.
Yeah.
And whatnot. Yeah, looking forward to it. All right. Anything else closing out this episode, Tony?
Nothing from me.
Excellent. Well, until next, Sunday night.
Sunday night.
For the listeners, though, till next time, I'm Luke.
I'm Tony.
I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite podcast on the internet.